Welcome to Food Conversation Season 4. I'm your host, Warren Bell, and this is CKVS 93.7 FM, the voice of the Shoe Swap, radio for the people, by the people, and with the people. Before we begin, I'm going to acknowledge once again that we are living and broadcasting from the ancestral, unceded, and essentially stolen lands of the Shkwepmek people. We have to resolve this dilemma together before we proceed any further, and everyone has to be on board for this project. Today, I have the pleasure and delight of having on our show Tracy Edwards, who is the facility manager of the Zest Food Hub here in Salmon Arm, and has been in that role from the very day the doors opened, and has been very busy as a result. We've worked hard to get her on the show, and now she's finally here, and we're absolutely thrilled. Welcome, Tracy.
Morning, Warren.
It's a big job, and if I'm not mistaken, you're doing most of the work on your own. You have some support, but what's a daily routine for you at the Food Hub?
Well, I am on my own, but I do have the Salmon Arm Economic Development Society team behind me also. That's who facilitates the Food Hub, but I am the only one on site at the hub, yes. So my day starts at 8:30 a.m. most days and ends at 4:30 or 5 whenever I wrap up the day. Hmm. My day looks like a general, you know, maintenance and checking the facility. And then also I mentor new businesses in food safe, packaging, and all other aspects of their business, actually.
The business of producing food and processing food is not a simple one, and we're going to talk about that at more length. But Lanafit from the Salmon Arm Economic Development Society and Jen Gamble were two people who were important for kind of getting the show on the road, as it were. Why don't you explain what they had done before you came on board and then what you took off with after that?
So initially it started with the Minister of Agriculture creating some grant opportunities in the province of BC for food hubs throughout the province. So the city of Salmon Arm, they did a feasibility study and they found that Salmon Arm was well suited because of its situation and the huge agricultural community.
That was the key, that it was embedded in an agricultural area.
Absolutely. Mm. And if you take a look at on the minister's website and the other 12 hubs that are out there, or 11, I guess, there's 12 of us in total. Mm. Then you'll see that most of them are in like really different agriculture or fishing or, you know, all different kinds of...
They're already in the food world.
Yeah, definitely. Mm. So yeah, that was really important. And as we know, the area around Salmon Arm is really rich in agriculture and food production. So that was the beginning. And then they built a team. And with that team, they ended up submitting the grant after doing all the studies, the grant application. The city of Salmon Arm was awarded the grant, and Salmon Arm Economic Development Society oversees the building of the building, the creation of, you know, how it was going to work. And now they are actually, they still oversee it. The Salmon Arm Economic Development Society.
They've played a very important role as a sort of liaison between the ministry and the city and the operation of the food hub itself. It's interesting that agriculture in this area had initially been very much local agriculture, except for the apple industry, of course, which shipped all over the world up until the 40s. When it collapsed because of a bad frost. But much of the agriculture over time became growing things to go elsewhere. Now, the food hub is working in, I wouldn't say the opposite direction, but a somewhat different direction. It's trying to enhance and facilitate the development of local food producers and growers. Was that the way things started off, that as you came on board, it was clear that you were going to be enhancing what local people were doing?
I think that for the first year, we really concentrated on just getting the hub up and running. Operational procedures, standard operating procedures, just attracting users to the hub. And now moving into 2023, our work plan's a little bit different. We want to really nurture that food community that we've got going on around here. We've got some plans in our 2023 work plan to work on a food directory. We'd like to connect users with producers, restaurants, institutions, and things like that. So that's what we're going to focus on in 2023. 2022 was just the work to get it up and running. And now the fun will begin. So right now we're really lucky. We've got, not lucky, it's been a lot of hard work, but we've got 27 registered users of the Food Hub. Some of them use the Food Hub for 3 days a year, and some of them use it for 1 day a week. And some of them have their own dedicated spaces inside. So right now we have 6 current anchor tenants that rent monthly at the Hub.
And they're there all the time.
They're there all the time. Their businesses live there. So that's really exciting. There's a lot of good smells that come from that, for sure.
Yes, and when you come into work, sometimes the smells are very enticing.
Yes, they are. And for example, today we have the Shuswap Food Action Society in there. We work really closely with some community partners too. So they are doing a school soup program. And they do it on Tuesday, Wednesday mornings, and it smells delicious.
I had some soup from the Shuswap Food Action Society at the Farmer's Market on past Saturday, and it was, I went back for a second helping, and it was all gone. So there's some magic going on in the preparation of food in the Food Hub. Tracy, what brought you to this job? What, I mean, like everyone on this show, people have a background that's sort of circuitous. It goes here and then it goes there. And I understand you're no exception, because you'd be a very, very unusual person if you said, I'm going to work in the Food Hub in San Marcos when I grow up. So what do you bring from your own sort of occupational work experience that really has prepared you and made it and been relevant for this work?
Well, my background is in microbiology and food safety and quality assurance. So I worked for almost 30 years in the brewing industry and malting. In the Okanagan Spring Brewery, I was in their quality assurance department, and Gambrinus Malting, which is in Spalmaschine. And then my life took me to Revelstoke, so I worked with Mount Begbie Brewing Company very closely in many different roles, because they were a really small business, but I did help set up their quality assurance department. And then I moved into the cannabis industry, so I worked in as a quality assurance manager for a startup that was rating their license through Health Canada. So I was working mostly with compliance with Health Canada and quality assurance at that time.
So you had quite a leg up when it comes to how do you fit into the sort of legislative and regulatory structures that are around food production.
Yeah, I think so. It's always a treat to jump into some regulations, of course, and they're all a little bit different. But
we have a smile on our faces at this point.
But definitely, you know, we've got some different levels of producers at the Hub right now, too. We have one tenant that is taking their products interprovincial. So that's, moves into some higher regulations. Just locally, we deal with Interior Health Authority for food safe plans and operating permits. So they're very easy to work with. And, you know, as long as you jump through the hoops and that are required to be safe, which I think everybody should do,
yes,
because food safety is really important, then, you know, then you can have no problem producing a food product.
Your clientele haven't necessarily had this kind of expertise that you bring to the... What's it like taking in, say, a small producer or grower and saying, okay, you want to process some of your produce or, you know, something, some food that you've prepared or grown, and you say, okay, here's how the system works. So what kind of reactions do you get when you lay out the process, and they know that they have to adapt it. What's that kind of introductory process like?
I think that it varies from person to person. Some people, they think that it's a little bit of overkill, right? But once I explain to them the possible outcomes, like if they're doing a high-risk product or even a low-risk product.
What would be a typical high-risk product?
High-risk products are more are things that are involve less sugar, a higher pH, and more water.
So for listeners, a higher pH means it's not as acidic?
Not as acidic. It also refers to things like dairy, meat, sometimes even simple things like canning corn, because it's not acidic. So it can harbor bacteria and then potentially cause poisoning.
And then you wrap it up, and then the bacteria have a little feast.
Yeah, they're like, woohoo, let's go nuts.
Yes.
But no, honestly, I think that it does differ from person to person. And I've had really good reactions from most people. And if you do it right from the beginning, then you're done. And then you can just concentrate on taking your products to market.
Mm-hmm.
So if you get the paperwork and the red tape out of the way, then you can have the fun.
Then you just concentrate on what you really wanted to do, which was process something and make a different kind of food product that you can put out in the market. I'd just like to remind listeners that I'm talking with Tracy Edwards, who is the facility manager of the Zest Food Hub here in Seminar. A little while ago, on December the 2nd, you had the Zestmas at the Zest event, a sort of a pre-Christmas celebration, I suppose you'd call it. Hot apple cider, warming your hands by the fire, and shopping for local food and beverages. And Santa, I gather, was along. There's a lot of Santas around. I'm sure you had a very fine version of that. Was this something that kind of was a signal both to you and the community that, you know, you're there? Was this the first one, by the way?
This was the second.
The second one.
We had the first one. We literally opened our doors in November. We hadn't even had the first tenant use the kitchen yet when we had Zestmas. And it was first created as an opportunity to bring awareness to the community that we're here, our doors are open, and we're ready to rumble. So that we gave tours the first year and took about, I would say, 30 tour groups through. Lanafit and myself were the tour guides, and we just showed off the shiny new facility to the public.
I've been through, and it is very shiny.
Yeah.
There's a lot of stainless steel here, there, and
is.
Everywhere. So how many, roughly speaking, how many people came out? Was it a bit of a steady flow through?
This year?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was amazing, actually. This year we didn't offer tours because the kitchen was fully booked for the whole time Zestmas was running.
It was a business kitchen.
It was a business kitchen, yeah. But we probably had about 300 to 350 people come out just to browse the local vendors that were offering their goods for sale. And
so what did the local vendors do? Did they have displays or?
Yeah, they just had like a typical farmer's market. It was an outdoor market, so it was a little chilly. And it's always a challenge because it's dark. So we have to have enough light strung up, which also makes it look really pretty.
Chilly, dark, and pretty.
Yeah, it was pretty. And we have we had some fire pits going. We had some wood-burning barrels and some propane fire pits. And some of the vendors had little propane fire pits behind their booths. And it was nice.
It sounds like a true celebration with lots of fun. And there was a bit of music, too.
Yeah, we had the singers and the choir from Sullivan come up from the high school. They also brought some of their brass instruments, so it was lovely. Yeah.
And did they sing any music to do with food, or is it more about Christmas?
I was just running around.
You have no idea what they did.
I didn't know what they were singing, actually. They had a lot of good Christmas carols. But
the Food Hub officially, the definition, if you like, of the Food Hub is a shared processing space where local food businesses can produce their products and benefit from vast community experience. I guess that's you, the vast community.
Well,
or the people in the community.
Yeah, there's a lot of networking too.
So that is a very significant part of what goes on through the hub. Mm-hmm. You get people connected to one another.
Absolutely. We have several caterers using products from our bakers in there now. So because we catered a lot to, well, really almost any food business, but we have some food trucks and caterers that sell finished product to ready to eat products.
And so they take products from the people who produce them in the kitchens.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah. And our booking software is called the Food Corridor. And on the Food Corridor, when you become an approved member and you've got all your documentation submitted, then you become what's called a client. And within the client environment, there's a messaging system. So they can reach out to each other in there.
So you actually built in a networking tool to the actual engagement process. It's right there.
It's right there, yeah. It came with the software that we actually use.
Software and hardware, when you have a cooking facility, a food processing facility, you have to have actual tools to do the job with. And one of the principles I remember at the very beginning that was critically important was that you have industrial strength tools and utensils and machines. And that was a huge rate blockage that slowed things down for many people in this area who wanted to try producing something but didn't want to spend a couple of $1,000s on equipment that they might only use intermittently. And the Food Hub has actually filled in that gap, right?
Yeah, absolutely. That's one of the benefits of the Food Hub, even for people that need it for just a couple of days a year, is that they don't have to invest that money in those large pieces of equipment. And we have acquired some amazing pieces now.
I think you have something that, a device that can, or is it put in jars, something like 20 a minute or something like
that. Yeah, it's a filling machine, actually.
tell our waiting listeners about your filling machine.
The filling machine is a pain in the butt, actually, but it works. But no, it's a small-scale filling machine. It can do 28 jars a minute at the fastest.
Okay, listeners, 28 jars a minute, that's small. That tells me some of the brewers you worked in probably did like thousands in a second. Anyway,
yeah.
But still, that's pretty big volume.
It's big volume. And it actually, you know, because it's also very accurate. So when you're hand filling, if you want to fill a jar with 300 milliliters, let's say, and you go over by 20 mils, doesn't seem like that much for one jar. But in 100 jars, that's 2 liters.
Yes.
So it's very accurate, and that, you know, will increase your ability to get your product out there at the right cost,
right?
Not at, you know, an estimated volume.
Of the people who are coming now to use the Zest, the Food Hub, how many of them are people who've been in business for a while, growing or maybe doing some rudimentary processing, and how many of them are sort of there because you're there? They said, boy, finally, we've got a place we can go to.
Yeah, I think it's a pretty even mix. I mean, we've attracted people like Madeley Blueberry Farm. They've been around for a long time, but now they're commercially packaging their blueberry jam at Zest. We also have brand new companies. We have a new gentleman that just joined the Food Hub. He hasn't even used it yet once, but he's a chocolatier. And he's not going to be selling chocolate, but he's going to be teaching chocolate classes. So right bean to bar.
I think we all need a chocolate class, don't we?
Yeah. And there will be two upcoming. That's really interesting. So watch your social media for that.
A chocolatier, of course, is somebody who works with chocolate. It's sort of, I may be wrong about this, but it's got overseas implications, you know. People come from France and they come from other parts of the world. Is this chocolatier, has he been around the world?
I think he has. Yeah. He has a really interesting app too, where you can find like craft made chocolate all over. It's really unique. I haven't dived too far into it yet, but it's a really unique app.
So other people's who are also producing chocolate.
Yes. Like craft chocolatiers.
Isn't that a wonderful thing? You know, that as you were saying earlier about the sort of mechanism that you can network through the food hub, but the fact that there are people coming to it who want to network. I mean, that's an important part of what they do. They don't just, they're not just looking after their own product line. They're also trying to enhance other people's work.
Right. And we have a great marketing gal that works at SAIDS. Her name's Kate Watson. I just want to give her a shout out because she's actually helped a lot of the people that are at Zest with their marketing. She's available to mentor too. So that's amazing because I think part of the food business is definitely getting the word out there about your products. And I think that's also intimidating to people too.
Speaking of that, is there some place that people who have products produced and or processed in the food hub can, like a place they can post information about what they're doing on a sort of a community-based website of some sort?
Well, right now, that's what our work project is for 2023, okay. Is the local food directory. It's going to be a big project, but it's going to be amazing. And we're going to work with the Shuswap Food Action Society on that. And hopefully we'll have it up and running within that calendar year. It's going to be a place where restaurants can find local producers, where institutions can find local producers, and just even someone that wants to just buy their own local groceries can find them. I think it's going to be really great. And there's a few examples out there that work really well, so we're going to kind of follow those examples and then go from there.
One of the things that people are recognizing is that we have enough information. We have a lot of people of goodwill willing to work on projects like this. And what we can do to enhance that, and really does enhance that, is connecting, is the networking process. You go to a conference and it's the breaks where people at the breaks, you know, hang out with one another and have a conversation and say, oh, I didn't know that. And what about this? And I'm doing this. And kind of talking to one another about shared interests and where they can go with what they're doing. It seems to me that that's, I mean, the word food hub, or the phrase food hub, sparkling with the word zest, of course.
Yeah.
is exactly what it's becoming. It's not just a processing facility. It's a networking facilitating, you know, you're the facility manager, you're the facilitating manager as well in many respects.
Yeah, it's definitely a hub. And another idea that we have for our 2023 work plan is a business-to-business event where we host vendors or producers that want to attend and sell their product on a larger scale. So then we'll be inviting grocery stores, restaurants, caterers from the area so that they can actually see that they don't necessarily have to buy off of a truck that comes to town.
From far, far away. From another planet or solar system. Yes.
Let's keep it local.
Well, that's the way food was always consumed. It was always from local sources. And then we went about 70 years ago after the Second World War, we went kind of off the rails and long distance delivery of foods and many other things, consumer goods, began to be the norm. And there were some economic reasons for it. But now people, I think, are understanding that we've created a bit of a monster, especially because so many of these delivery routes entail massive production of greenhouse gases. And we all know that that's not a good thing. And it's becoming increasingly obvious that that isn't a good thing. So you have anchor tenants and you have people who kind of float in and float out. Why don't you just do a kind of a bit of a rundown of the anchor tenants and who they are and what they do?
Sure. We have the anchor tenants and the other ones, the floaters. We call them rotating tenants.
Rotating tenants. That sounds better than floaters. Floaters in my world means something in your eye that you occasionally see floating by and you wish it wasn't there. But these people are ones you're happy to have there.
The anchor tenants right now, we have six. We have Will's Food Inc. They produce Chinese cooking sauces. They're also the ones that just finished writing their preventative control plan. They're taking their products interprovincially. So they're waiting for approval for that. And then we have Kurt Sausage. Kurt Sausage has been in Salmon Arm for quite some time, but he's changed the model of his business to sort of more of a retirement model.
What's a retirement model mean? He's just doing it from time to time?
Yeah, he does markets now and events. And then he sells his products in sort of specialty stores like La Marche and Revelstoke and places like that. His son will be taking over for him soon. So that's exciting. But he's got a really nice setup at Zest, lots of equipment in there.
Do people sometimes bring some equipment or negotiate to have some equipment that they find particularly useful for their specific product?
The anchor tenants actually supply all of their own equipment.
Ooh, they do.
Yes. So they get a space and we meet their electrical needs, their plumbing needs, their ventilation needs, and their gas needs.
So they've been already doing some processing long before they came to the Zest?
Not all of them. No. We've got Will's Food Inc. is brand new, so they were with us through their research and development phase, and they were right on board right from the very beginning. And then now their products are to market, but they were with us while they were developing them too. We have Canadian Barley Tea. They're from Salmon Arm also. Exciting thing for them this year, they took their products to Amazon, so you can buy their Momugi barley tea on Amazon now.
I tried their tea. It was given away at some event that I was at the food hub for, and it's quite tasty.
That was at Zest Fest, our spring market.
Yeah,
we had the barley tea.
Yeah,
available. Yeah, yummy. And then we've got Flake pastry chocolate cake. They're in. She's grown really fast and is going to have a retail space in Centinoka Mall. So that's where she's going to do all of her baking at Zest and then sell at Centinoka Mall. So that's really exciting. We have Forest and Food Fixation. She's a baker. She lives in Blind Bay, but she sells at the Sorrento Farmers Market. And then she also is in the Salmon Arm Health Food Store, Askew's, and Blind Bay Village Grocer and Lighthouse Grocer.
So you're this vital link between somebody who's preparing food, who needs to have an opportunity to prepare food, and then fans it out. That's their task, is to fan it out to retailers in the community.
Yeah.
Or retail locations, anyway.
Exactly. Mm. And then we have one more anchor tenant that just moved in, and that is Gaia's Pantry. She's not selling retail yet, but she does the markets, and she makes hot cereals and energy balls and granola. So she really makes the place smell good too.
Yeah, I have a feeling she's at the farmer's market here, the Saturday farmer's market.
She is.
Yes, I've seen and quite an array of products, you know, lined up and a lot of detailed, you know, this granola for 3 o'clock in the afternoon and that granola for 10 o'clock at night, that kind of thing. Quite subtle and interesting. So you're actually in a physical space way and also in a sort of interactional way. You're cultivating relationships between new business and old businesses and businesses, food businesses and food producers and the community at large. It seems like it's kind of a ferment. I hate to use that because your background in brewing, but
that's okay.
But there is a certain amount of ferment going on, and it is quite an active process.
Yeah, it's definitely, every day is different. So every day brings something new, and it's just a big fermenting pot. Exactly.
Well, fermentation is a pretty ancient process, and it does a lot of good things. So let's imagine we're walking in the front door, which is sort of in that corner at the front. And what's the first thing that a person sees when they come in that door?
Well, if I'm not in the back working or cleaning, then they'll see me sitting at my desk.
and those are rare occasions?
Yeah. No, that's where my desk is located. But we do have something in the works that we might turn that into another tenant space. So we're kind of busting at the seams, but we have a waiting list to get into Zest. So we might turn that into another kitchen.
So you're victims of your own success. People are starting to really move towards you in numbers. So you've, in your, at this point, office space, where do you go from there? I mean, obviously, I've been through the building and it's mm-hmm. got some interesting layouts, but you leave your office and you go into a corridor.
You go into a corridor that is, it was very nicely put together. We've got barn doors on the tenant space that give access to them for big enough to put a pallet through. That was the reason it was designed that way. And
a lot of thought went into the design of this
building. It absolutely did, yeah. And that was before my time. So I came on board at the beginning of September. So the framework was there. We weren't quite open yet, but the framework was all there. And it is really beautiful inside. If you look at a food hub, it's quite nice.
It's got food everywhere.
It's got food everywhere, too.
And so you're going down the corridor and...
We've got one anchor tenant to our left and three to our right. And then we have another room, which I should mention, we call it Kitchen 3 because it hasn't been sponsored yet. So there's a little bit of sponsorship opportunity there. For
listeners, there's an opportunity.
Yes. That's going to be an outfitted shared kitchen too. But we're also, just so that everybody knows, we're a nonprofit. So we are, always looking for those people that want to be involved and potentially sponsor us.
Right.
We've had some great luck with that. We have Community Futures has sponsored our other kitchen, which used to be called Kitchen 7, is now the Shuswap Community Futures Shared Commercial Kitchen. With their logo above it.
Do you actually have 7 kitchens?
We do. We have 7 right now.
I remember when I went through, I saw one giant one, which was full of amazing equipment, but now you have 7.
We have 6 anchor tenants. Those are their personal kitchens. And then we have Community Futures, Shared Commercial Kitchen. And we have Kitchen 3, soon to be whatever it becomes, but it will be a smaller version of Kitchen 7. It will also be a shared space. And then we're going to branch off a little bit from there, and we have a committed anchor tenant from that. We're going to divide that space into 2, and we have a committed anchor tenant for that space. And then there's the potential development of my office space.
And then as you head out towards the back, there's a giant opening that people can bring stuff in.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of the design feature of this building, that somebody can back a truck up to the door and unload quite a lot of stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
And do you get a lot of stuff coming in?
We do.
So what kind of, sit there watching and say, well, that's interesting. I wonder what that's going to turn out to be. So what kind of stuff do you see coming through that giant back factory kind of door?
A lot of packaging material. That seems to be the bulkiest, jars, boxes, whatever people need to package their product into. A lot of raw food. We had a caterer in on the weekend. He was there for 3 days and he did the City of Salmon Arm Christmas party. And I think there was approximately 200 people attended it. And he had a lot of food. We barely had enough fridge space for him.
So, and that would be something that can be done as a sort of a one-off. Somebody can say, okay, there's an event and I'm the caterer or I'm supplying the food, whatever it might be. And they can come in and just do some massive food preparation exercise in whatever way they wish to do it. And then they would make sure it gets to where it needs to go and it's done in a safe and effective manner and that kind of thing. So the big kitchen, let's have a look there, because I must admit I found it a fascinating exercise to see all this. It was like an ordinary kitchen but sort of expanded exponentially mm-hmm. into large scale and efficient and quick moving kind mm-hmm. of equipment. So why don't we go around the room, which very well and our listeners will probably be, you know, delighted and fascinated to hear about.
Well, I'll talk about some of the specialty equipment first, because that's the most fun. The first one is the filling machine, which is mobile. If you need it, it's moved into the room for you. The second is we have a vacuum packer.
What does the machine look like?
It's run on a compressor, so it's pneumatic and all by air. Mm. It has a big hopper on the top that you fill up. So it's got about 20 liter hopper on the top. And so it's pneumatically fed, but also gravity. And then it's got two fillers on the very end of it that the hopper feeds into. And the pneumatics pull the product in using air back and forth. Mm. It's a really compact machine. It's not that big.
Does it seal the packages in some way?
No, you have to hand put your lids on. You have to hand.
You need people.
You need people. Yeah.
Good.
It's not.
I want work for people besides work for machines.
Yeah. It's good, but it's not that good yet. So moving from the filling machine, then we've got a vacuum packer, which a lot of people have been using and taking advantage of the vacuum packer. Hmm. Even people that produce products in mason jars can use a vacuum packer. If it's a dry product within a vacuum packer, it increases shelf life and makes a perfect seal with a mason jar.
And this is a vacuum packer that doesn't fail because it's in a commercial, you know, preparing for food for commercial distribution. There are machines you can buy at various stores that are, you know, they suck the air out and then you seal it and you have to seal it here. But this one is sort of a fail-safe vacuum packer.
It's an industrial vacuum packer. Right. Yeah.
When the air is gone, it's never gone. Comes back.
Yes. And you can't use your average sealing bags that you can buy in the store either. You have special. To source them. Yeah, yeah, there's special ones. So the vacuum packer was a wonderful addition to our equipment. Then we also have a Blixer, which is a RoboCoo food processor on steroids.
A Blixer?
It's called a Blixer, yes.
This sounds like something from Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
Yeah.
Blixen. So what does the Blixer do?
It's a food processor that can make something so smooth, kind of a combination of a blender and a food processor. It's all stainless steel. It does, I think it's about 15 liters. And you can make things as smooth as tahini. So from sesame seeds, it's amazing. I'm kind of afraid of it.
I was going to say, wouldn't want to stick your finger into it. You might not have a finger anymore. So it's got some kind of mixing device inside a contained space.
A huge blade. Yeah.
A huge
blade. It's terrifying, actually.
My goodness. I'm just starting to think about it. I think it might be terrifying. One of those things that you have in the horror movies where somebody, you know, all right, let's get rid of Charlie.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Eek. Oh, dear. Let's stop talking about this. We're going to have a bad night. But it's a very effective machine.
It is, yeah. And people that need one are amazed when they see it because it's also very expensive. So people, the average company cannot buy one.
I think Blitzen is something with lightning in German.
Blixer.
Yeah, it's Blixer. Yeah, good Lord. All right, the Blixer.
And then we have RoboCoo Chopper also too, which is a continuous feed chopper. So like a food processor, but it spits it all out the side. So if you're grating carrots, you can just keep putting carrots in and it fills the bowl. You don't have to take the top off. It's just a continuous feed.
And it moves fast.
We were gifted that from the hospital. They were cleaning out their archived equipment and they let me be the first person to go and snoop. And I did. And I got a few goodies from them, which was awesome. So that also enhances like community relationships. There's a lot of people behind the hub that want to see it succeed.
Right.
So that was really great.
Yeah.
Then we've got a 6-burner gas stove, a grill and a griddle, a deep fryer, a 5-tray convection oven and 2 gas ovens and a 25-gallon kettle. Which is another piece of equipment that is well used.
I'm sure the kettle must be a couple of feet. Is it look like a kettle or it just looked like a...
It looks like a big pot. It's a tilting kettle. So when you cook soup in there or process jam or salsa or whatever you might need to do, it's like a double boiler. So it's a steam jacketed kettle.
Okay.
Yeah. And so it helps. You can't really burn things in it, which is really nice.
For sure.
A lot of companies use it currently that we've got as rotating tenants.
Yes.
And then we've got the industrial dishwasher, high temp dishwasher, which helps clean up.
How hot is it?
I think it goes up to 164.
So very close to boiling. Or no, this is Celsius.
Fahrenheit.
Fahrenheit, okay. So it's very close to boiling temperature.
Yeah, it's very close to boiling.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's high temp.
It's way better than pasteurization.
Yeah, it's the safest.
Yeah, yeah.
The safest dishwasher. And then it's also aided by chemicals too. I mean, there's wash and rinse and all that too.
Mm-hmm. I'd just like to remind listeners that I'm talking with Tracy Edwards, who is the facility manager of the Zest Food Hub here in Seminar. So that's the big kitchen.
Oh, we also have a meat grinder.
Okay.
And a meat slicer.
Hmm.
So a meat grinder and a meat slicer. Those are important parts too.
And are they sort of industrial strength, you know?
They are.
The meat goes in and
very
quickly a whole bunch of slices come out the other end.
Yeah. And also the meat grinder, the meat slicer, and the vacuum packer are three things that we also would encourage people, if they raise their own meat or if they have meat from hunting that they wanted to make into sausage, you can rent the kitchen for personal use too.
So that would be a rotating client.
That would be a rotating client, not a floater.
So let's talk a little bit about the rotating clients and what kind of people they are or what kind of work they're coming to do in the hub. Obviously, there'd be a somewhat different kind of client in some respects.
Yeah, we have a pretty vast array, actually. We have some community groups. So, for example, the Dragon Boat Ladies came and used the kitchen and they did all the charcuteries for the Dancing with the Stars performance for the Salmon Arm Dancing with the Stars.
Yes.
And we have had some kids groups come and use the kitchen. So Larch Hills Nordic Group is using the kitchen for building granola with some of their guest skiers for one of their events.
Hmm, interesting.
So that's kind of interesting.
Kind of fun, too.
And fun, yeah.
How old would the kids have been?
Well, that event is coming up on the 16th of December. Mm. So that one is in the future, not in the past. Mm. And then we have had the Rotary during the Wine Fest. They came and washed all their dishes after, used the high temp dishwasher. So they didn't prep any food, but they did take advantage of some of the specialty equipment.
Yeah.
So there's all kinds of different things. And then we have a lot of businesses that are rotating tenants too, that use the kitchen for the one-off, like the Madeley Blueberry Farm, Elderberry Grove Syrups. They come and do all their packaging at Zest now.
Hmm, interesting.
So they don't need that. They don't need the facility, you know, on a daily basis, but during harvest time, or when they want to produce syrup, that's when they'll be coming in.
So what the hub offers is a way to kind of speed through a particular process that requires special equipment, but also is a sort of a mass event where a lot of little things are happening, but then they have this all the material and the food gathered together, and it goes through like doing the dishes for the Rotary, you know.
Yeah,
suddenly
exactly.
You can do a whole bunch of dishes really fast.
Yeah.
And you don't have to hire somebody to come over and wash them for you. And you know that they're clean and sterile too.
Yes, absolutely.
It's got an attractive quality to it, that it draws people in who want to get something done quickly on scale.
Yeah. I mean, when Madeley Blueberry Farm came in and did their jam at the end of their season, I think they did close to 1,000 jars. And it was because they could do the upscale, the jam, in a 25-gallon kettle. It just makes it so much faster.
This is one of the things I remember when the Food Hub was being conceived. This was something that was seen as a critical feature for the community at large, that people who are growing things on what would be considered a relatively small scale, but it isn't necessarily a small scale. It's like hundreds of pounds or, cubic feet, cubic meters of stuff. But they could come to the hub and they could just, like some giant food processor, you come in the front or the back door, the food comes in and zzz, and then the magic happens. And out it comes as something that could go on the shelf of your local grocery store.
Yeah.
Now you said, and we're coming a little bit towards the end of the show, you said that the plans for next year are this expansion of the communication process. Mm-hmm. Why don't you talk about that a little bit?
Well, I think that we just want to make the Food Hub exactly what it sounds like, the hub. We want to network, and we want to make it a place where people can connect. And that doesn't always necessarily have to be in person. So if we can create a directory that anyone can go on and look at and find, let's say you are looking for bacon and you want bacon, but you don't really want to go to the store and buy maple leaf bacon. You're kind of the mindset that you're going to jump on the local food, but
And I think more and more people are doing that.
Absolutely. I totally agree with you, Warren. Hmm. So you go on the food directory and you put in the search engine bacon, and it's going to pull up all of the farms within. And we haven't decided on the boundaries yet or where it will be, but Shuswappin greater area, I think. Mm-hmm. And you can find, Keenan Family Farms and Bell Meadow Farms and whoever else produces bacon. And that's going to be the beauty of it. That's what we really want to work on this year. And also, some outreach to businesses to start thinking, that's maybe the way that the future should go. There's of course barriers. There's, sometimes price is a barrier for that. Sometimes delivery is a barrier for that. So that being said, we're also going to develop a huge cold storage space behind our facility. We have a reefer back there that is ready to go. We have to do a few renovations to it. So we hopefully will address some storage space issues for producers also, because cold storage is hard to come by.
So the reefer is it's on wheels?
No, it's permanently on the ground.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's all wired in and ready to go. We just have to put a new door on it and put some lighting in it and a floor. So we're...
some small details.
Small details, yeah. Always looking for grant options for that.
Anybody with grants listening to the show, here's your chance to step
grants
up to the plate.
Grants and sponsorship, bring it on.
Well, it's something that the radio station also seeks on a regular basis.
Absolutely.
So what you're going to be doing in this new project is strengthening and formalizing the linkage process so that people can go to a sort of a one-stop shop where they can find out what's available, and then they can network on their own.
Absolutely. And then, each, when you click on one specific farm, let's say you're looking for a product, then the farm, it'll take you to their page. You can find out where they're going to be. So if they're going to be at the Salmon Arm Downtown Farmers Market, you can say, okay, well, I want to go and visit that producer, that producer, that producer, and that producer. And then that's a one-stop shop. If not, if they have farm gate sales, you can go to their farm and pick up products. They'll be able to list where their products are for sale at local retailers too. So yeah, we're really excited about it. And it's going to be something that we're going to work hard on.
You mentioned farm gate sales, and that raises an interesting issue of how things have evolved with respect to food availability and distribution, because, as I'm sure you're aware, at one point farm gate sales were banned. They mm-hmm. were considered to be problematic because of quality control and that kind of thing. But of course now people are thinking differently. They're saying, well, if I know the farmer, and I know the farmer is a reliable, thoughtful, intelligent individual, why would I worry that he or she, and there are a lot of young women in particular getting mm-hmm. into the farming roles, why would I assume that he or she wouldn't be cognizant of the kind of rules that you lay out for clients who come to the food hub? You know, there's food safety issues that need to be addressed. You just can't act like they're not there. And now, of course, farm gate sales have been reinstated. And it's, I knowing people who had farm gate sales and then didn't have them and now have them back, they have been very enthusiastic about this positive change. And it seems to me the food hub is kind of centrally located in that process of relocalization, which is a word that people are now using a lot, bring the food back to our community so we don't have to buy something that was grown or processed, you know, 5,000 kilometers away, probably under somewhat challenging circumstances, whether it's the treatment of workers, or whether it's the kind of agrochemicals that are used. I feel inspired hearing about this. What's it like for you in the middle of it? I mean, you have to do the hard work, but...
Well, I think, like, I don't know. I've always been of the mind that you should try and eat local. I'm a huge gardener. We had a big family. We had a lot of mouths to feed. So, you know, I've always been really pro local food. So I think that just getting the message out there is really important. And once people realize that it's not that difficult, then I think that's what's going to, the movement's going to change, especially if they've got a tool like this at their fingertips.
Indeed.
Where they can go, oh yeah, I can go and find whatever I want, whether it's dairy, cheese, meat, produce, dog food, you know, like why does dog food even need to be shipped? We've got a local dog food producer right here in town, that little bit out of town, but you know, we've got all of these things right here that we could use. We've got local wine. We've got local beer. We've got
cider.
We've got distilleries now.
Indeed.
We've got it all. So of course you might want to have that special bottle of scotch, but we've got it all at our fingertips now. So we can actually go back to that way of thinking.
I'd just like to remind listeners that I'm talking with Tracy Edwards, who is the facility manager of the Zest Food Hub here in Seminar. What's it like for you personally, you coming to this kind of place and this kind of role? You worked in large-scale breweries, you worked in local craft breweries. Here you are working almost exclusively in, first of all, the nonprofit sector, so it's values, not just money making, that's at the core of what you're doing. And you're in the forefront of a process that we see frequently on Food Conversations when we interview guests. We see people saying, I want to make food and grow food and share food the right way, you know, with some value attached to it more than just, you know, your profit margin. What's it like for you to be in the center, as it were, in the hub, that's two hubs.
That's a loaded question.
Well, does it feel like this is a good place to be? I'll prompt you there.
It does. I was going to say exhausting, but no, it does.
Well, you can say exhausting
it
does. Too.
It feels really good, Warren. And yeah. I love the buzz around it. The buzz around it is really fun. And I love seeing a new small company succeed. Mm-hmm. That's a huge benefit behind it too. Not only the quality of the food, but the people that are behind the products, and if they succeed, that makes me feel really good.
I was there when Lana Popham came through town. Mm-hmm. I actually interviewed her after she had officially opened the Zest Food Hub. Since that has happened, and more broadly, in an engagement with the provincial government, which has direct control over food and how it's processed and managed, that relationship's been a pretty good one as far as I can tell. Is that how it's been for you from
Absolutely.
Your end?
Absolutely. We get a lot of support from the ministry. We have a little bit of reporting that we do for them, but mostly we get an amazing amount of support and documentation.
Yeah, and I certainly got that impression when talking to Lana Popham herself, that having been an orchard, a viticulturalist with an organic production line. She understood the hard work part, the exhausting part, mm-hmm. but also the value of supporting small-scale, value-driven mm-hmm. food production.
It's definitely a passion project for her.
Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah. And they came and did a video of Zest last month, and it'll be released soon. They're just editing it now. So watch for that. It'll be good.
Is there a title for it?
I don't think there's a title for it yet, but we definitely will have it on our website.
Okay. So. And it's a video about...
About Zest.
About Zest.
All about Zest.
So yeah. you'll be a rock star in the local food business. I want to thank you, Tracy.
Yeah, thank you.
Your perspective and your insights and your enthusiasm for what I think is really a very forward-looking operation and a very forward-looking institution in this community is palpable, and I'm sure much appreciated by many people listening to this show. Thank you again for coming and joining us.
Thank you for having me. It was lovely.